Do 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 do. Colin Ben, Colin Ben, Colin Ben, Colin Ben. Lawrence, on the phone.
I accept your call.
Hey, Ben.
How's it going?
It's going all right. I'm at work.
Still?
Now let me explain. I'm at my home, but I'm also at work.
Ah.
Sometimes that happens in this modern life.
Yes. Does that mean you're going to be work distracted for the next hour?
It should not. And here's the reason why. Not to get into what I do for a living, but sometimes a lot of my work is waiting around for other people.
Right.
And depending on how long it takes other people to do things, I don't necessarily have to work, quote unquote, all the time. I just have to look out for their emails.
Right.
And if, in fact, there's something I need to do, what I'll do is you'll hear me say, oh, shh, and then I'll swear. And then I'll say, okay, episode's over, and that'll be
it. I'm assuming that when you receive this email, it's something that needs immediate attention.
Yeah, probably. But who knows for real? There's a chance that it won't. So, in which case, I'll just go, huh, and then I'll continue talking to you.
Huh. Look at that. Somebody sent me a thing. Thank you, somebody, for a thing.
Yeah, exactly. What's the point? Who did it? How come? another thing, for work, I was asked to fill out a form, and the form said, please use Internet Explorer for this. And so I was using Internet Explorer, and there's a section where I was supposed to use the delete button. Well, the delete button didn't work. And I looked online, and I was like, hey, does anybody know why the delete button wouldn't work? Do this, do this, do this, do this. Finally, because I solve problems, I opened the page up in Chrome, delete button worked fine. So, you know, do they want you to use Microsoft Internet Explorer because they don't want it to work? That seems silly.
Well, I don't know all the politics involved with your place of work, but I'm surprised they offered up Internet Explorer anyway, because Microsoft doesn't even support it. Well, they probably support it, but they've moved on to Edge.
Microsoft Edge, yes.
That's their browser now.
I know about it, and I don't know either, but... You know, probably my guess is that whoever made it way back when, and they haven't updated it.
It's always possible that when this form was made, this person had like Explorer and Firefox on their machine,
sure.
And like Explorer had like, you know, JavaScript enabled, which made the form work, and Firefox didn't. So he thought, oh, it only works in Explorer.
I mean, this seems like a pretty smart group of folks doing this, so I don't know. But it could be. So, Ben.
Paul.
Lots of stuff has happened since we talked.
Yes.
I'm going to share some of it with you.
It's been a week and a day.
One is... What's that?
It's been a week and a day.
It has been. I have figured out that I'm a baritone.
Oh, have you?
Yes. Now... If you might remember, at one point in time, I was not a baritone. I was a tenor. In fact, I think even when you met me, because we did vocal testing or something for ATF.
Vocal. I don't remember the vocal testing. Did we sing and somebody was like, yep, you're a tenor.
We sang and well, no, this is the important thing. We didn't get tested like thoroughly, right?
Right.
But I believe I said I'm a tenor because I remember because Ron Darling said that he was a baritone,
right? And there were some barbershop quartet style a cappella singing in the show, so
yes.
We had to know where we stood.
And I don't think I did badly. As a tenor. And the reason that I said that I was a tenor is because I took voice lessons. I actually paid a vocal coach in like 1993, to 1993, around that time. And again, they said, you're a tenor. I did a little thing where they hit the notes on the piano and I did the thing.
Right.
But yeah, now I'm a baritone. And it explains a lot, because a lot of my go-to songs to sing are no longer in my range. And I was like, oh, I'm bad at singing all of a sudden. But I'm not, if I'm singing within my actual range now. So that was cool.
Right. And so do you need to pick a new set of songs, or do you just adjust the range you sing when you sing these old songs? Well,
I could adjust the range, but then again, you know, I still kind of want to match the note of the singer who sang the song that I'm singing. You know what I mean? It's easier with songs I don't know that I have sheet music for, because then I can hit what the note is and, you know, figure out what the melody is and all that kind of stuff. Or songs that are within the baritone range already that I already know.
Well, I don't know much about music, but can't you just hit the same note but an octave lower?
I can, except that you have to remember it's the spread of all the notes in the song. So if, like, say the starting note is too high for me and I go an octave lower, that's great. Unless it goes lower and lower and lower, in which case
you make your new song.
It might hit a song that I can't do, which is why, and this is what you're talking about, you can adjust it by like a half step or two half steps or whatever. So you have your range, right? And you adjust it so that all of the melody that you're singing fits within your range. And then you're fine. Except, like I said, if you have that sort of cognitive difficulty of singing two steps away from the note that you want to sing, which is the note that the person's singing. Does that make sense?
I stopped listening miles ago.
Okay. yeah.
But it all comes down to you need to find a new batch of songs to sing along in your range.
Yeah, and I've been doing a pretty good job.
Are you just now finding a comfortable range, or do you think your voice has changed in your old age?
I think it's a little bit of both. And this is the reason why. I remember fighting with Mr. New Neighbor, who was the vocal guy when I was in sixth grade.
Mr. New Neighbor?
Yeah, that's his name.
shout out to
Mr. New Neighbor. He is not alive anymore. But yeah, he was.
He's now Mr. In the Ground.
He was. Oh my God. Ben. He is indeed. He was one of those guys that would like hit you with his ring.
What?
Yeah. There was corporal punishment was okay in the school we went to. And so he had this ring and he would turn it backwards so that the stone was like facing his palm, or, you know, on the palm side of his hand. And he didn't want to whap you in the back of the head.
He didn't want to hurt the stone.
Right. No. He did it so the stone would be on the side that hit you, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see. I thought it was the other way around.
Oh, no. Pinpoints like, the like he, pressure and all that.
He would hit you with like a punch. Not like a like he would punch you, but he would hit you the back of his hand.
Yeah. No. The mechanics of this are pretty, but okay, so you've got your ring.
I think I understand.
Big stone there, and then you turn it around, right?
Yeah.
And then you hit open hand slap, right? With the big rock part of the ring contacting the young child's skull.
Did Mr. New Neighbor leave marks when he did this?
No, it was on the back of your head. So, you know, you had hair and stuff that would bark.
Oh, that's okay.
But he did break a paddle over me at one point in time.
Did he?
Now, granted, he had hit like three or four other students before me. So... it was loosened up or whatever. Yeah. And it was a pretty old paddle.
They just softened it up for you.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, he was the choir guy.
Yeah.
He taught choir. And I never forget it. It was Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, which is from some place. Oklahoma? Is it Oklahoma? Maybe.
I don't know, actually.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. Like that. Now, that is an example of me not singing it the way that I sang it when I was a kid, obviously. But I wanted to sing it lower. And he tried this thing where he lied to me and said that, okay, he would play it lower. And they played it the exact same thing. So I tried harder. And I hit the notes finally. And then he looked at me and goes, you know, I played it the same way. And I was like, oh, okay. So
epiphany.
So I was singing at the very top of my range. That was when I was in sixth grade. And so I can get up to an F sharp if I'm, you know, really trying. But I used to hit higher notes. I am positive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot about my voice changing, but also just the idea that I'm a tenor. I try to, you know, get that to work. So here's an example of someone writing into work, and it's nothing I have to deal with. I'm like, great. I will be following along.
Are you replying to a work email at the moment?
Yeah.
Well, in which case, exactly. I'll say this. I don't sing often. And I used to, the only place I would sing is just along with the radio in the car. But I've stopped doing that because I have started putting an old iPhone in my car as a dash cam, just in case, you know.
And just in case the cops pull you over?
Just in case something interesting happens up ahead and I can go viral on YouTube.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I... So, if there are any police listening, Ben, why would you pull Ben over?
Anyway.
No reason.
Maybe because I was speeding or it made an illegal lane change or whatever. But I see that a lot. I have caught a lot of people doing illegal things, racing to beat a red light, making illegal left turns on a red arrow against traffic, just running red lights, not using their signals. And I've decided that if I'm ever going to catch anything on my iPhone I'm going to show the rest of the world, I don't want my awkward off-note tone-deaf singing to be the background music. And this
Wait a second. So are you saying that you're recording constantly while you're in your car?
Yeah, basically when I'm driving. So but there was this instance that happened last weekend where I was driving downtown, and I had the phone in the cradle in the windshield, and it was going. And a Half Brother song came on, and I know the Half Brothers are friends of ours, and I know most of the words to their songs because I've listened to them a bunch of times.
And can I say, what good musicians?
They're consummate professionals too. They're a masterclass in what to do if you screw up a song live on stage. But anyway,
I have no idea.
I was driving down Denny approaching Westlake going westbound. Light was green for me, and Taters on the Wheel was playing. And I was singing along, but then for some reason I just stopped singing, fortunately. Because this guy on a skateboard just rode out right in front of me. So I'm doing 25 down a hill approaching this intersection. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this guy on a skateboard just start heading out into traffic. So I slam on my brakes and my car skids a little bit. Fortunately, the roads were dry and I hang on my horn. And as the skateboarder is crossing the intersection, you know, 15 feet in front of my car, he just puts his hand up. Like, brushing me off. It's probably, you know, like, oh, sorry, dude. But, so I just keep going. And I was actually watching the tape later, which I put on YouTube, by the way. Watching the tape later, I'm like, I'm surprised I didn't swear at that moment. But I really thought I was going to hit this kid.
Yeah.
So if you want to see me almost hit a skateboarder, go to my YouTube channel.
Hey, all right. I will take a look. Now here's the thing that's interesting. Today I was making a left turn and a guy who was waiting at the stop sign started going. Right?
Yeah.
Like he was looking. I was making a left turn. He was making a left turn. He was looking to the left. He wasn't looking to the right. And so I slammed on my brakes and he looked at me and he put his hand out too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that really was it. It was, I mean, we made eye contact and it was just like him going, "You okay?" And me going, "Yeah, we're fine." You know, that sort of thing. So that is a definite.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have to watch it just to make sure, but that is a definite, hey, are we okay thing.
I'm a pedestrian a lot in Seattle, and oftentimes cars will do, or drivers, cars aren't responsible, drivers will do terrible things. And
yes.
if they make eye contact with you, and let's say you're crossing the crosswalk and they almost hit you, they will wave at you. They're like, "I acknowledge that I almost did that."
Yes, exactly. Now the one thing that's kind of interesting as far as, you know, all that stuff goes, we have talked about this before. Have we talked about it within the last two episodes of the difference between pedestrians in Illinois and pedestrians in Seattle?
I don't think we've talked about that in the last two episodes.
Okay. So in Seattle, there's this concept of the invisible crosswalk, where if you're going from a corner to somewhere else, pedestrian has the right of way. I, as the car, should slow down. I shouldn't hit the person who's crossing the street.
Right.
Right? You would agree with that.
Correct.
In Illinois, even if there is a crosswalk, you're kind of up on the good graces of the person driving. And
really?
Most people assume, pedestrians and drivers, that the driver isn't going to stop. And so there's a thing that they do where they get right to the edge, the pedestrian does, right?
Yeah.
For the person going, so let's say I'm crossing the street, and you are in the right lane, I am on the left side of the street, right?
Yeah.
I see that you're coming, I start walking so that by the time you pass me, I will be able to cross behind you onto the other
right.
side. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's your brain is calculating the geometry of
exactly.
the car's velocity versus your location to the intersection.
So imagine the surprise of me and the drivers in Seattle when I do this maneuver and they slam on their brakes because they assume that I'm going to walk directly in front of them.
Yeah.
Because that's what people do.
Yeah.
In Seattle. It's weird. It took me a really long time to get used to it. It took me
less time. Not everybody does that.
Yeah, took me less time to do it when I got back because things have gotten weird here. You know, it depends now on what somebody's going to do. So I always, you know, find a crosswalk with a light. And I use the crosswalk at the light
yeah.
as much as possible.
There is a road that I walk across between Annex and my apartment that is not, there's no crosswalk. There are crosswalks, but I have to walk way out of my way to go to it, to go to one of the two crosswalks mm-hmm. on either end. And so I just cross in the middle where, you know, everybody crosses in the middle. And it's all one way, so you only have to look one way. And it can get very jammed during rush hour. But mostly there's plenty of opportunity to cross without bothering anybody. But there have been a couple occasions where I've done that, where I'm like, okay, this car's coming, and there's just enough space between the first car and the second car where I can walk across the street. But that means I got to walk into the road when that first car is still headed towards me. You know, they're in like they're in a far lane. So I'm not walking in front of them, but, you know, they'll pass me in the far left lane.
Yeah, this is the maneuver I'm talking about. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, more often than not, like that lane actually turns into an on-ramp. So people are kind of accelerating to get under that. But more often than not, they don't acknowledge that there's a pedestrian in the road. But sometimes
yes.
you'll get somebody who is like super skittish and will slam on the brakes. And
yes.
they won't stop completely, but it will surprise them. It's like when you see a cop, you know, it's like slam on the brakes, slow down. Oh, okay. Now I'm going to keep going.
Oh, can I tell you something? This is something that I've gotten very good at. Now in Illinois, there are a lot more speed traps than I witnessed when I was in Washington State.
Yeah.
And something that's changed now that I'm older is that when I see a police officer, I do not immediately slam on my brakes. I instead take my foot off of the gas.
Right.
And by the time that everything's fine, even if I wasn't going the speed limit, which I almost always do, Ben.
Right.
Even if I wasn't going the speed limit, I have reached the speed limit by the time it matters, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, when you get pulled over, one of the first things that they know is if you've slammed on your brakes, that's it.
Yeah.
Even if they don't have radar or anything like that, they will know that you were speeding and you know you were speeding.
But it's also like just putting your foot on the brake when you see a cop point his radar gun at you is really instinctual, regardless of whether or not you are speeding or know you are speeding.
Exactly.
Oftentimes, people don't even know how fast they're going. They're
Did
just
I ever tell you
going with the flow? Oh,
like maybe 3 months ago, 3 or 4 months ago. Ooh, probably even longer. It was last spring, I guess. So that's been a while now.
Okay.
Last spring, last summer, I was coming down a hill, and you know, going with the flow of traffic pretty fast. And I saw a police officer with his radar gun pointed directly at me, and he looked at me. We saw each other. And I swear he gave me a little nod, like, like, oh yeah,
like a little bro
yeah, this
nod.
Is it. You're well, no. I gotcha, like that.
Ah.
And then, like a gift from the universe, this other person, who couldn't, I guess, see the cop because of where I was at, just drove past me at 100 miles an hour. And he got on his bike and he pulled that guy over. But yeah. I knew just by the look that if that hadn't have happened, I was going like, you know, probably the speed limit, Ben. I was probably going the speed limit.
There's a, of course, he's going to pull you over to tell you what a good job you're doing.
Exactly. Obeying the That's speed probably limit. What was going to happen. Yes.
It's always makes your heart race when you see a motorcycle cop with his speed gun pointed towards you, and just like right when you're approaching them, they put the speed gun back in the holster. That happened to me recently, and I was on this stretch of road just south of Inner Bay, and it's 15th, and the speed limit there from the Ballard Bridge to like Denny Way is 30 miles an hour, but everybody goes 40 to 45 on it. Nobody goes 30.
I know of a similar stretch of road where the speed limit is normally in the 30s, but everyone goes 60 to 70 miles an hour.
Well, that's...
It is,
that's quite a difference.
Yeah.
So I'm coming...
And the thing is that if there's one person who's going, you know, the speed limit...
Yeah.
There is a train of like 20 cars behind them.
They're that person is the danger.
Mad.
They're impeding traffic.
Well, and the problem, the biggest issue is that no one can pass because they're all
bumper
to bumper.
It's a single lane road.
It's a divided highway, but just, you know, one lane going.
Well, yeah. Single lane going each way.
Yeah. And the thing, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I was driving down this road, and I honestly didn't know how fast I was going, but I saw a cop, and I did what you do. I just lifted my foot off the gas, which doesn't really, you know, help much, and it slowed me down a little bit, but right when I passed him, he put the speed gun back in its holster, and I could have swore that I was going to get... I was probably going 5 over at the most, man, that made my heart race for like the next 10 minutes, but I didn't get pulled over.
It's really crazy, you know, right? I mean, it is a fear response, similar to a large dog jumping up and barking at you. It's
right.
You're like, ah, what is happening? The one other thing about this this road that I'm talking about, eventually, this is the thing that's crazy about it. Eventually, there is a stoplight, a four-way stoplight. at a crossroads with another road like this. So no matter what, right? Let's say that you've had it, you know, you're the third car behind and you're like, that's it, I'm passing this guy, and you pass, you know, three people and you're going like 100 miles an hour, and you get back in and you drive 85 the whole rest of the way. As soon as you get to that four-way stop, those cars are going to be right behind you.
Yeah.
And that's my real big lesson, is that I'm just, you know, all right, I'm resigned to it. So when I come across it and I see that there's this, you know, 20 car chain or whatever, I'll not be at the bumper. I'll leave a car length between me and the other one. And sure enough, someone will come behind me and be just like riding. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do in this situation? Exactly.
Well, it's a race, of course.
Exactly. Do you want me to, speed up to close the distance between me and the car in front of them? Yeah. Am I supposed to? The other thing is, there's a concept of pushing the cars. That if you go fast enough, the car in front of you will also go fast.
Right, because they don't want you on their tail.
Right, this is what they are using to try to get me to go faster, and it hardly ever works with me. One thing that I do every once in a while that makes people mad sometimes when they're in my car is I'll just pull over and let the tailgater pass me.
Yeah.
And then get back in, because it's dangerous. You know, you're on the side of the road now.
Right.
You know, and not moving with the flow of traffic. It's always dangerous. But again, there's that thing. I let them pass me. And then, oh, Ben, are you at Annex or is that your...
No.
Your car?
No.
Okay.
My car's not going to have an alarm on it.
Okay. Oh, okay. Sorry. My car has an alarm on it. It's great when you buy a used car, like when you discover the stuff that they have that... You or the dealer didn't know, but yeah, I've got an alarm on my car. It's true.
Do you use it?
I do not know how not to use it. It is just always on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you didn't know this when you bought the car?
Nope. No. To be fair, Jennifer bought the car. I mean, it was Jennifer's car. And then we bought a second car that was going to be my car, but... The second car is a standard transmission and overheats a lot.
Ah.
So that is the around town car. And then my car is the automatic that I use.
Commuting to work car.
Yeah, exactly. I commute an hour a day. Half hour one way, half hour another way.
Right.
Never go the same route twice, Ben. Try to shake up your routine every once in a while. That's how they get you.
Yeah. Otherwise. Find a year's worth of different ways to get to
now,
work and back.
I almost hate to mention it, Ben, but I will, just because regular listeners to the show may recall that we have a segment called Corrections, where we go over things that we have said that were wrong.
Indeed.
For those of you who are not clear, this podcast is Google free. We do not use search engines at all for our stuff. We also don't, I hardly ever point this out, but we don't actually use like reference books like the Encyclopedia Britannica or anything like that.
Books? What are those?
But it's all us trying to do things through memory and through knowledge that we have gained as citizens of the United States of America, Ben. And unfortunately, the primary contributor to our corrections, my wife, Jennifer Pratt, is under the weather today.
Oh, no.
And corrections were not done by her. I'm guessing we don't have any other corrections.
None it's that I have that received.
Yes. So there you go. That's,
so I'm just going to take that. Is, as we said everything correct, yes, or last week.
Yes, until we know differently.
We got
that
everything
sounds
right.
Correct.
Episode 106.
Oh, hey, Ben.
Perfect.
I'm going to not tell you about test-driven development, but I was about to.
Test.
It's just basically a concept that you want a program to do something, right? When I click the button, a sign comes up that says, hey, it worked. Right?
Yeah.
So what test-driven development is, Ben, is that I give you, Ben, a thing that says, given button is clicked when... given button is present, when button is clicked, then button displays it worked, right? That's an example of a test that you might run.
Okay.
What test-driven development is this? You write the test first, and then you run the test. And the test fails because there is no button. So you create the button. And then the test fails because when you click it, nothing happens. So then you make it do the thing.
But
you get the idea?
You know, like so the conceit here is that you know what you know the end result that you want to achieve.
Right. You know the end result and you go to the end result instead of the other way around. And it's a kind of a cool thing in programming. And you might have already hit on where I'm going with this. It's also an interesting life philosophy. What do I want to do? Well, I mean, this isn't given. It is 6 o'clock. When it is a weekday, then I don't want to be working, as an example. And then if that's what you want, then you get a job that gives you that
if
thing.
If after 6 p.m. else or then don't work else get to work.
well given when then are the statements for the test normally. The if else statement, that'd be a programming thing. That's more of a developer than a tester thing, Ben. What I'm saying is this: I've been at work for a long time today and yesterday and the day before, and I'm thinking of things in terms of business now.
That's like slippery. That's dangerous, man.
When I was a kid, I had, you know, choose your own adventure books, right?
Yeah.
And if I read enough choose your own adventure books for a long enough time, I would start thinking in that way. Like, do I want chicken? Turn to page 4. Do I want to go to bed? Turn to page 2. Stuff like that. Like, I'd actually have like little switches in my brain that way.
Page 4 is the kitchen. Page 2 is the bedroom.
Right. Exactly. So getting back to that, I have decided I'm starting to play Fallout 4 again because I was having a lot of fun and I'm kind of over the concern about the, well, what does this mean for guns? That sort of thing. Because I was thinking about it and fantasy versus reality, right? Is a thing. Like we thinking about it this way, cowboys, right? Cowboy stories. There's a guy and he's on a horse and he goes into town and he says, you know, I'm a man of morals and I know that you're doing bad things, rustler, so I'm gonna, you know, save the Widow Johnson, whatever, all that stuff.
Right.
That's a fantasy. It's a story that's fiction. You know, in reality, the cowboy is once again annoyed at the fact that he doesn't have his coffee the way that he likes it. And he sits around for a really, really long time looking at the cows. Everything seems fine. You know what I mean? Nothing important, nothing really exciting, all that. Same thing with guns. Guns, in general, actual guns, care, maintenance, gotta oil them, gotta do all sorts of stuff to make sure they don't blow up on you, all that kind of thing. Video games, not so much. You know, it's a bunch of numbers that are playing around with other numbers. And if I can think about it in that way, then I'm not too worried. And in the same way, and this is the important thing, when I deal with conflict situations, I do not go, oh, you know what will solve this? Shooting a super mutant with my shotgun. That's not something that I find. It's true.
Are you talking about reality now? Yes. In terms of divorcing fantasy from reality, you don't think, because you're of a conscious mind, you don't think that in a complex situation in the real world, the way to solve it is to shoot a scary monster.
Right. And I don't, or, you know, a scary person, given, you know, the same sort of thing. And what, I guess what I'm saying is that, the concept that violent video games cause violence, I hear it a lot.
Yes, it's a well-oiled talking point.
But I do not think that that's how it works in the real world. it's like when that fight or flight thing happens, you know? All of a sudden you are not, you know, a hero that can't be stopped. You are a frightened person, and you're like, ah. Now the problem is, and this is where we get to it, a panic response when you have a gun and are trained to use a gun could in fact involve shooting someone. That is a thing. If you're scared of someone, you might in fact do that.
Well, you might not do that, but you might think of doing it. That might be the impulse. Impulses and actions can sometimes be, you know, you can separate the two.
Then again, though, what if you are a police officer? Because then
you need to work on that.
Not only have you been trained to do it, you are somewhat. So, and again, I'm saying somewhat allowed to. To exercise that,
right,
as a thing. So I don't know. It makes me a little. I'm glad that I am not a. I'm glad that I'm not a police officer, Ben, is what I'm saying. But I will be playing Fallout 4.
Speaking of fight or flight emotions, I've always. You know, you and I have done theater. There's always that moment before you go out on stage where your body just needs to go to the bathroom. And I consider this a fight or flight moment. It's an autonomic response, if that's the proper word, to this either anxiety or whatever sort of emotion your brain is feeding into you, whatever chemicals your brain is dumping into your body to prepare you for this moment, right? And I always think of, whenever I think of human evolution, I think of like the very first level of that. The first level meaning like the first humans. I think of African bushmen walking through the tall grass, you know, hunting for food, looking for, you know, a place to sleep that night. And the fight or flight always being engaged by like an approaching lion. So every time this always pops into my head, and I have a show tonight, and I'm probably going to think about it tonight. The impulse to just drop trow and squeeze one off before going out to do a show.
Hey, wait a second. Are you performing in a show?
Well, the Sergeant Rigsby show is tonight. It's the final weekend tonight. So by the time this drops, the show will have closed. But if you're listening, you probably should also, you should have known about it. I think of this lion approaching these hunters, and then the hunters just immediately having to go to the bathroom, like just squatting to remove some weight, I guess, so they can run faster. I don't know, but that always pops into my head.
Well, I think now here's a crazy idea. Follow me on this. What if the whole concept is this thing's going to eat me? I'm going to poop so that I'm disgusting. Right? Because how many times has a frog or whatever, you know, pooped on you, and you're like, oh, gross.
Well, I can't remember the last time I picked up a frog.
Yeah,
I do know what you're talking about, though. I have been pooped on by various animals. I would say that that's a possibility, but you also have to understand that the line is probably going to eat your intestines, so it doesn't really care.
Oh, well, yeah, maybe.
Unless it's one of those things where the poo inside the intestine, inside the body, is like the cereal milk. But then if you pour this cereal milk into a glass and drink it that way, it's disgusting. Like, the milk inside the cereal bowl right after you eat cereal is delicious. But if you pour that same cereal milk into a glass and drink it that way, and you see all the bits of cereal floating around,
that's the worst. I get you.
And so, like, maybe that's the lie. It's like, ew, it's outside the body. Gross. Now it's gross.
You have a really, really good point. I like it. Okay, wait a second.
That's all in a way of saying that I think of African Bushmen pooping a lot.
So, I'm of an opinion that we as people, in general, don't look at what we eat enough. And the reason I think that is because how many times I've bitten into something and then gone, oh, wait.
Right.
I remember, for instance, Carl Budding makes the corned beef. You remember that kind of thing?
Yes. Yeah. But the sandwich meats.
There was one time that I bit into like a whole thing and it was gray on the inside.
Oh, jeez.
And that was disgusting, and I no longer can consume it. Again, cottage cheese one time, I ate a bad cottage cheese that was no good. And just recently, I was making quesadilla.
Yeah.
And I just happened to look at the cheese, and there was some blue stuff on it. And that was gross. And if I hadn't have looked, I would have melted it in the microwave, maybe even folded it up and not eaten it. And my question is, how many times don't we catch that? You know, how many times have we eaten something and we don't realize that it's
probably
horrible?
Probably more often than not, but I'm guessing that a lot of these hangers-on, a lot of these stray pieces aren't too dangerous. I eat popcorn in the dark a lot because I like eating popcorn when I'm watching a movie at nighttime, you know? And I am not looking at the popcorn. I'm staring at the TV screen. And I can imagine that maybe in this bag of popcorn that I bought, there is like an insect carcass that just happened to get into the production line. I'm going to eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, well, you know, it's not going to hurt me. Except for it being gross. But, you know, the time is coming where insects will be a huge source of protein for us.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about that if you're allergic to shellfish, you'll be allergic to cricket flour, which is crazy.
Cricket flour?
But, you know, cricket flour. Now, this is the idea. What is cricket flour, Ben?
I'm assuming it's pulverized crickets.
Ground up.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, if it's flour, well, hey, you know, it's not as gross anymore because it's in a powdery form. And they say that it's a source of protein. You can bake it into baked goods and stuff. But I'm allergic to some forms of shellfish, so I'm
violently allergic, I must say.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You were there.
I was there.
That was at a movie thing, and it was not good. It's happened again. There was oyster sauce in this thing that I ate when I was visiting my dad in Chicago, my biological dad, and it was not good.
Yeah. That's terrible.
So Ben, speaking about Sergeant Rigsby, can you give me a little bit of an idea of what's going on in this one? You told me before, but I forgot.
It is about gentrification, homelessness, and self-identity.
Oh, maybe you didn't tell me about this. Who's the main character? Is there one?
Chicken Jenny is the main character.
Okay.
That's what
I was hoping.
There are a couple of main characters. There's two in Act One. There's two divergent story or two different storylines that converge in Act Two. And so, Chicken Jenny, of course, she's down on the world is her oyster sauce, but then she gets down on her luck and finds herself hitchhiking across the country and becoming homeless. And the second story is about this long-suffering assistant to like a social media influencer who finds herself underneath I-5. She gets injured and ends up living with and befriending the homeless creatures who live under I-5. And I call them creatures because they're not people. In the story, they're like I know where you're going with this, but one is the character who was the assistant is a cat, you know. Another character is like a four-legged dragon. Another character looks like a ram. You know,
yeah.
Scott writes for animals, not for people.
Right.
Yeah, and it's basically about the trials and circumstances of homeless in Seattle, specifically Seattle.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Because that's always been an issue, right?
Homelessness in Seattle?
As long as I've been there.
Yeah, but it's more so because this is the fastest growing city in the nation, and the wealth gap here is pretty astronomical. And
yeah,
you know, when you have big industries like Amazon basically taking over the city, and you have this workforce of people who make, oh, I don't even want to guess what they make, but it's enough, you know, that the social services in the city, you know, homeless people just kind of get in the way of the tech workers, so these people get pushed further and further out into the edges of the city where no services are. And the city's even going so far as to put up fences underneath overpasses, which have been popular homeless encampments.
Wow.
Like just in Ballard.
I
was driving through Ballard the other day, and underneath 15th Avenue in Ballard, just north of the Ballard Bridge, there used to be, you know, it looked like a tent city. It was a tent city, and I drove by there recently, and the city was just in the process of putting up all these fences to keep the homeless out, regardless of what they're saying, because why else would they do that?
Well, I mean, it goes back to that whole thing about how public art sometimes would have, like, if it was long and flat, it would also have to have, like, little ridges in it and stuff like that, so that
people couldn't sleep on it.
People couldn't sleep on it. Yeah.
The city just doesn't know, and I don't know if any city has this right, but the city doesn't know how to deal with the homeless problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's tough, right? Because, yeah, as people get displaced, it's harder and harder to, I think about all the Sidran stuff. You know, laws like you can't sit down on a public street.
Right.
Things like that, which I don't know if they ever actually went away, you know, or if they're still on the books.
Well, you see signs about that or you see signs for that every once in a while, but you never see it being enforced.
Gotcha. I saw it being enforced when I used to live there. In a really weird and passive-aggressive, hey, maybe Seattle,
yeah,
sort of way, where the security guards would go walk up to a guy and ask if they could help him over and over and over again.
Right. Yeah, and it's I don't know about the social services available in Seattle for the homeless. I don't know if there are, like, soup kitchens or shelters or anything like that. I honestly don't know. But it feels like there aren't. Just because of the sheer number of people I see sleeping in doorways just on my, you know, 1 mile walk to the office. And, that's always been a problem Seattle's had, is not having the resources. But the thing is, I did read an article in the Seattle Times where they put up these, like, bike racks underneath this overpass in Belltown, I think, where the homeless used to sleep. The cost of the bike racks and the cost of the installation of these bike racks was more than the amount it would have cost to feed and house these homeless for people for 6 months.
Yeah. It's always, you know, it goes back to the Whitey on the Moon thing, Ben.
Whitey on the Moon.
And that's a tough thing. I think we've talked about this before. It's similar to like royal weddings and stuff like that. There is absolutely no way for us, for everyone to have a royal wedding. There just isn't. You can't do it. So either there are no royal weddings, or, you know, you have a couple of people who get them, who are the royals, and, you know, the kings and queens get to do stuff that we don't get to do, and we maybe don't all support it, you know, verbally, or even, you know, people rebel and stuff like that, but we give it to them just by sheer position, you know.
Yeah.
And wars are fought over, you know, I know that I'm getting off topic a little bit, but the basic thing is that
it's a topic.
I don't know. Wait a second. What's happening?
Did you get another work email? What just happened?
Yeah, somebody just wrote back to something, and I don't know what that means. They might not know that they did it. That's always possible. It's okay. Sent from my iPhone is one of the funniest things that you can get in business meetings sometimes, because it's always something like, "Hey guys, can you set for my iPhone?" Maybe we should set for my iPhone. So, like, you know, they've accidentally.
Oh, I see. Sent they've accidentally hit send. Well, that's the thing about iOS is the I think the send is too close to the keypad.
Yeah. So that is most likely
it's too it's too easy to accidentally send emails and or texts.
Yeah.
Lord knows I've done that.
So, you know what time it is, Ben? Hey, Betty!
Oh, God.
Yeah?
Come on over.
Okay!
So, now here's something very exciting. It's called Ben Talks to Betty While Paul Answers an Email. So, here, Betty, put these in. Okay, now you guys talk like have an actual conversation. Okay, I'll be right back.
Watermelon, watermelon, watermelon.
I like that you know that. Rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb.
Split peas.
Maybe I don't want to bring that up. Hey, you had a performance at a school musical performance recently, didn't you? Isn't that why?
It was a concert, and my parents didn't come.
It was a concert.
Oh no, Betty! Don't shout so loud.
And I cried.
Because
my parents didn't come.
Oh my god.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they thought that the concert was at 7:30 when it was at 7.
Uh-oh.
And they missed the entire sixth grade part of the concert, and I bawled my eyes out.
Oh no. Well, it was an honest mistake. Are you going to be able to forgive them? Well, are you at least going to be able to guilt them about that for a number of years?
And I still love them.
Get what you want. Oh, of course you do. But you're gonna be able to be like, you know, if you're shopping, like clothes shopping, and you want a pair of shoes, and your dad's like, "Well, you already have a pair of shoes. You don't need a new pair of shoes." But then you say, "Remember that time when you missed my concert?" Then your dad's like, "All right, what size of shoe are you?"
Well, one, I'm pretty sure I maybe will do that. Two, I just bought new shoes, so I don't have to worry.
Right. Oh, good, good.
So what's happening in your life, Ben?
My life? Well, I'm sitting here at an annex, and it's raining. It always rains. Well, it doesn't always rain. It was quite nice over here the past couple of days. But it's raining now. And, yeah, in about an hour, I'm going to take the train to a theater in the International District and perform at a puppet show.
Ooh,
I'm a puppeteer in a puppet show.
I hope you have a good time with that.
I hope so, too.
I remember seeing a puppet show once.
Yeah.
Oh, it had a monkey in it.
And
I'm pretty sure the monkey was on an... I was on a tree, and another animal wanted, like, a plum or something, and the monkey was like, okay, I don't really remember it.
Hey, and I can't hear you, Ben, but I just want to say that I believe that that was by our friend Gavin Cummings.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Oh, and Betty, don't tell your dad this, because I know he can't hear, but tomorrow is my birthday.
Dad!
What happened?
Tomorrow is Ben's birthday!
Oh no, Betty knocked the thing over. Hey, here, Betty, let me have the headphones.
Okay. Again.
Oh no. Hey, Ben?
Paul!
You're gonna talk to Betty again. No, you aren't. I'm going to give you a call back, and we're going to talk for 5 more minutes, but I need to take a break for a second.
Okay. I'll be right back. All right. He's back.
Hey, so for those of you who didn't know, Ben, how much time has passed since we last talked?
20 minutes.
20 minutes. Yeah, so I was doing work stuff. general work stuff. This is just a note, Ben. There are two different mindsets I've noticed, and I hate to be the kids today thing, right? but the difference between 20-year-olds and people my age, it goes kind of like this. Hey, you have to do this. No, I'm not doing that. But you have to. And then they just don't do it.
Right.
What? It's one of those things why...
Are you
I'm
gobsmacked?
Like, why didn't I think of... What's that?
I said, are you gobsmacked?
Well, it's one of those things of like, why didn't I think of that? And then I realize it's because I like things to get done.
Yeah.
You also
wanted people to like you and respect you, and if you did work that was asked of you, you thought people liked you and respected you.
It's pretty much true. I mean, I think in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is one of those things of like, I mean, I'm not, this is the other thing that's weird about it. I'm not this person's manager, right?
Okay.
I can't go, but you have to.
But no, you really
I could just look at it and go, I would recommend that you do it, I guess. I don't know.
Which is why I have steered my life towards the fact that I do not have employees.
Yeah.
Nor do I have bosses. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. In fact, Ben, I've been meaning to ask you, how exactly does work for you?
I have what I call clients.
Oh, yes.
They're kind of like bosses.
Freelancing is its own, yeah.
They're kind of like bosses, but... And when they ask me to do stuff, I will do it because I want the work. But there's also, like, I had one guy I do work for, and he's like, can you do this? And I'm like, no, I can't do that right now. And I can't do it until after this date. And he's like, okay, good to know. Thanks.
Oh, well, there you go. So
it's,
I think we're done. I didn't plan on talking too long afterwards, but I also ended it with, I'll give you a call. So here it is.
So here it is.
The other thing is, you know, in general, like I said, I'm not one of the kids today sort of things.
But it does seem to break down kind of on a demographic line. And I'm starting to see the differences between millennials and Gen X. I always thought of us as being kind of a group.
Yeah.
You know, and like we're all still kind of the same. But I realize now that, like, for instance, you know, being left, right?
Yeah.
Left, on the left side of things. The older people, like the sort of Gen X liberal types, are like, hey, man, work with whatever banks you want to, as long as you're cool with people loving each other and, you know, aren't a big jerk, I'm fine with you.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas the kids are like, hey, don't you realize that if they actually are supporting corporate stuff, they actually are supporting the people that don't like this stuff? And blah. And it's one of those things of like, I'm like, no, I didn't really think about that. You know, that sort of thing. Like, it's not that they're like, man, we don't have to play by your rules. It's like, well, actually, I've done this research and this is actually causing this and so on and so forth. So maybe they know more.
Well, I think they're more stuff. Socially proactive. And as opposed to the Gen Xers, which when we were teenagers, which is, let's be honest, how generations are judged by the generation in their formidable years. Gen Xers, the overall opinion of Gen Xers was that we were lazy.
No, I'd say that's pretty true.
But we were also being judged by boomers. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
Ready Player One. You've seen me post about it. This will be the end of my rant.
Okay.
Because I got the thing, Jennifer and this guy on the internet, both of them said some things that made it perfect.
I've seen the trailer, but I have not read the book.
So here's my point. The book, right?
Yeah.
Jennifer read the book and said, hey, this is pretty good. And then I read it and I'm like, yeah, I like it. Right? So then the movie comes out and the trailer comes out and everybody is like, oh, I hate this trailer. And not only that, though, they don't just hate the trailer. They also say that the book was bad. And I, hold on, Betty. And I was like, what do you mean the book is bad? I mean, everybody loved the book. And no, nobody loved the book. Everybody thought it was bad and problematic and all that. So I had to actually go back and look, and I found articles that were like, this is one of the best books I've read in a decade and stuff like that. And I was like, what happened? And this is basically what happened. The book was out 7 years ago, right? Millennials get a little bit more power. They're able to look at stuff and they're like, oh, this kind of isn't good. Because the problems they found out with it are genuinely correct. I'm like, okay, so, you know, they were 19 when the book came out. They're like 26 now, you know, in general.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have a little bit more of a voice, a little bit more to say and all that kind of stuff.
And then here's the other part.
This is the part that Jennifer pointed out that is absolutely true. What is one of the defining characteristics about Gen X? We hate stuff when it becomes popular. So it's a perfect storm of basically, well, this is actually problematic. Oh, yeah. And it's a Spielberg movie. Gross. And then so that's why nobody likes it now. And I'm sticking to it.
I think the movie looks pretty cool. I'm excited that they were able to have licensed vehicles in it.
Oh, I'm going to have to talk to Betty about it, too. We're talking about Ready Player One, Betty.
Oh, I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah, Betty's not going to watch. See? What did I tell you?
I'm interested in it, actually.
Yeah, and that's...
It's not because I think it might be bad. It's because I'm just not interested.
And this is the other thing when it comes to nostalgia, Ben. We got our nostalgia pure from the source. You know what I mean? All the stuff that's in here, we saw it first run. We saw it when it was first out.
Right.
If your experience of Ghostbusters is, hey, look at this cool movie, as opposed to, wonder what Ghostbusters is going to be like, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. The nostalgia trip on it isn't going to be as great for you. You're not going to...
So the movie is for Gen Xers, is what you're telling me.
Well, I think about it this way. Maybe you're going to like your friend more because they introduce you to such a cool thing.
Betty mentioned that maybe you would like your friend more because they introduce you to such a cool thing, which is true. I think that's part of being friends with people, Betty, is sharing things with them that they don't know about.
But remember, you cannot force people to like stuff.
How long did you say that you were going to talk to Ben?
Oh, yeah. Betty's telling me I need to get off the phone.
She's the one keeping this conversation long.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So Ben, I'll just say this to you. Keep it wrong.
Yep. Always a pleasure talking to you, Paul. Keep it wrong.
Yes, you as well, Ben. Yep. Thank you so much. All right. Talk to you more later.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.